Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 286 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to be talking about a topic that is now super high yield for the USMLE exams. Very high yield for step one, very high yield for step two CK, very high yield for step three. And it's become especially more even high yield. If you consider the stuff that's been going on in the healthcare industrial complex these days with COVID-19. So I would highly recommend that you pay attention to this podcast. If you're taking literally any USMLE exam, this is one of those things you can almost guarantee that you'll see as a question. And then at the end, God willing, if we have time, I'll talk about a life lesson about how you see yourself. And just a reminder, for those of you that are studying for the Step 2 CK exam, I have a course that's coming up starting this Wednesday and going all the way till Saturday. There are two separate courses, actually. So on Wednesday from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Mountain Time, you know, which is 4 to 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll be doing the MBME Test Taking Strategies course. It'll be held over Zoom. And then from Thursday to Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, right, which will be 1 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be going over the Step 2 CK content. That's a 16 and a half hour course. That's on Thursday, on Friday, and on Saturday. That's a separate course, but most people just do both together. And in that course, we'll review very high yield comprehensive content across internal medicine, peds, surgery, OB-GYN, neuro, psych, biostats, ethics, healthcare systems, quality and safety. So those things that he basically introduced after starting in November 2020, I'm going to review those in very great detail. So again, if you're interested, feel free to reach out to me and just email me through the website and I'll give you more information. People that have attended this course in the past, the 10-hour version, found it to be extremely helpful. But now this 16.5-hour version, I'm just doing this to expand the content that I'm covering in, like, in internal medicine and all those things, but also to cover these new things and also introduce a lot of biostats and ethics to this. Because, again, it's just something, all these communication skills, these are things that the MBMEs have been testing more often in recent times. So let's jump right into it, right? So what is ARDS, right? ARDS, we've heard ARDS, some people call it ARDS, right? That's acute respiratory distress syndrome, right? Basically, it's respiratory failure that happens very acutely, right? It's respiratory failure that happens very acutely. And one thing I will say right off the bat is there are many things that can cause ARDS. And I'll discuss pathophys, treatment, improving survival, complications, and all those things. So don't worry about that. I'll try to be as thorough as possible, actually, from the MBME's perspective, right? But the thing is, these people will have, like, some kind of acute insult, right? Sometimes it can be sepsis, right? So people can become septic and get ARDS, right? People can have pancreatitis. Pancreatitis is a very common cause of ARDS. COVID-19, right? You know, it's basically like a really bad kind of pneumonia that can cause ARDS. If you aspirate things, right? Like if you aspirate like stomach contents, that can absolutely cause ARDS. I'm just trying to bring up the common examples that pop up on MBM exams. If a person has like a really bad motor vehicle accident, say for example, like a pulmonary contusion can give rise to ARDS. Another classic one is if a person drowns. ARDS is a very common complication of drowning on MBME exams, right? So these are all things that just in general can cause ARDS. And ARDS, right, again, these people will be like super tachypneic, so they'll be breathing really fast, right? Their work of breathing is extremely high, and you'll understand the reasoning behind that in a bit. You know, these people are super cyanotic, right? And I think it's very high yield for purposes of MPM exams to know the chest x-ray or at least imaging findings, right? They'll have bilateral opacities on imaging. You need to remember this buzzword. These people, I'll say that again, will have bilateral opacities on imaging, right? So like it'll just be like a complete whiteout on both sides of the lungs, right? It'll be a complete whiteout on both sides of the lungs. And again, ARDS is bad, right? People don't do very well with ARDS. I mean, about 40% of people that contract ARDS are going to die, right? despite our best medical efforts, putting them on mechanical ventilation and all those things. So out of every 1,000 people that have ARDS, 400 of those people are going to perish, right? And it also depends on the severity, right? Like, obviously, if you have more severe ARDS, then the mortality rate goes through the roof pretty much, right? So that's why COVID-19 is bad. And that's why, again, I feel, at least in my role as a healthcare professional, I should, or a person that does a lot of medical education, I should mention, please, even if you've gotten the vaccine, right? Even if you've not gotten the vaccine, even if you work from home, just please protect your fellow man. Wear your masks, wash your hands, practice social distancing. Just take those necessary precautions, right? Take those necessary precautions so that you don't end up in the hospital on a mechanical ventilator. Trust me, it's not fun saying your final goodbyes to your loved ones over Zoom, right? Let's just exercise wisdom for a few months, but be able to have at least a lifelong friendships, right? Lifelong relationships with parents and all that stuff. Just exercise a little wisdom, right? People are not trying to take away your rights. They're literally just looking out for you. They're literally just looking out for you, right? Because the healthcare system as is now is super overloaded, right? You see residents just working a ton, nurses working a ton, right? Increase patient to physician or patient to nurse ratios, right? So let's just be reasonable, because these people on the front lines, they're really suffering, right? There's a lot of mental health problems coming out of this COVID-19 fiasco. So please, let's just be mindful of other people. So, okay, so let's talk about, I guess, the pathophysiology, right, behind ARDS, right? So what's the pathophys? So basically, right, people that have ARDS, they have, the first event is they have some kind of injury in the lungs, right? They have some kind of injury in the lungs. And again, the injury can be from like aspirated stomach contents, or the person gets drowned, or the person has an infection. Basically, there's just some kind of injury. And then that injury, right, leads to inflammation, right? But you may say, Divine, how does that injury lead to inflammation? Well, the thing is, when there's an injury in any part of the body, what does the body do? The body is going to recruit inflammatory cells, right? It's going to recruit like neutrophils. It's going to recruit like T cells, believe it or not, especially in ARDS, right? So you recruit neutrophils, recruit T cells. And the thing is, these things, they are very good for cleaning up injury. But the thing is, when you bring in the cavalry, right, just kind of imagine this. Let's say, for example, there's a big armed robbery going on at a store, right? And you call the police, right? They bring the SWAT teams and everything, right? And they're shooting. You know, they're taking care of the criminals. The thing is, yes, in those shootouts, you're going to annihilate the enemy. But there's going to be bullet holes everywhere. There's going to be people falling over everywhere. They'll have to maybe, like, throw some doors down, right? So there's going to be a lot of damage. Yes, you're going to fix that problem. But there's going to be there's going to be like a big aftermath, right? I mean, the company is going to spend a lot of money fixing all those problems, right? So that's kind of like the same thing, right? When a person has injury in the lungs, right, you're going to call in the cavalry, call in neutrophils, call in T lymphocytes. But when those neutrophils and those T lymphocytes show up, they'll kill everything. They'll take care of the problem. They can take care of the pneumonia that's there. They can take care of the aspirated stomach contents that are there. They can take care of the chemical that you may have inhaled, right? They will take care of all those problems. But the thing is, your lungs, unfortunately, will be the person's lungs, hoping and praying that it's not your lungs, but the person's lungs will be caught in the crossfire, right? If you kind of keep that mentality in mind, you see why ARDS is really bad, right? So just think of a person's lungs as having like a ton of bullet holes, ton of damage, all those things, right? So the thing is, these inflammatory cells, right, especially like neutrophils, when they show up, what do? They release all these inflammatory mediators, right? So they release things like histamine, like bradykinin, and all those things. And when you release all those things tend to cause an increase in capillary permeability, right? So you have an increase in vascular permeability. So that means fluid and stuff then begins to seep into the lungs, right? Because if you damage those pulmonary capillaries, for example, right, you begin to have like a ton of fluid seeping into the lungs, seeping into the alveoli, right? And obviously, that fluid that's in the lungs, right, over time, you'll begin to organize and form this thing called like a hyaline membrane, right? In fact, if you look at H&E smear, like, you know, take a section of a person's lung that has ARDS, do a H&E stain, right, hematoxylin and eosin, right? You're going to see a lot of pink, right? A lot of that being, you know, some of it is pulmonary parenchyma, but a lot of it are those hyaline membranes. And those hyaline membranes are just not ideal, right? Those hyaline membranes are not ideal because those things, essentially, they increase the thickness of the space that oxygen has to traverse for you to exchange gas, right? Because think about it, it's almost like your alveoli, right? Is you have like your regular alveoli, and then you come and line them with stuff, right? These hyaline membranes all the way from top to bottom, right? You're increasing the distance, you're increasing the thickness that oxygen has to take, right? In allowing people to have that gas exchange, right? Obviously, that's not going to be good for the person from a long-term perspective. Okay, it's not going to be good for a person from a long-term perspective. Because if you remember, right, like diffusibility of a gas is going to be equal to the area available for gas exchange divided by the thickness, right, multiplied by the pressure differences, right? So if, for example, so you see that the D is almost, so the diffusibility, that's the D, is equal to the A, that's the area, divided by the T, that's the thickness. So obviously, since the thickness is inversely proportional to the diffusibility, if the thickness goes up, the diffusibility is going to go down, right? So that's why, in general, the DLCO in a person that has ARDS is going to be decreased. I'll say it again. The DLCO in a person that has ARDS is going to be decreased. That's one. Second thing about ARDS with regards to these lung numbers, again, that your friends at the NBME would love to test, is the AA gradient, right? What should be true of the AA gradient in ARDS? Remember, the AA gradient is basically the difference in oxygen tension between the oxygen that is in your alveoli and the oxygen that is in your bloodstream, in your blood vessels, right? So obviously, again, if you have these hyaline membranes in play, all this fluid in the pulmonary parenchyma that the oxygen has to travel through, right, to get into the pulmonary capillaries, you can already begin to see that that's a problem, right? So you can imagine in your mind that, oh, because there's this great distance that oxygen has to diffuse through, then the oxygen tension inside your alveoli is not going to be as equal as possible to the oxygen tension inside your pulmonary capillaries. So the AA gradient increases in a person that has ARDS, right? So ARDS is an example on NBME exams of hypoxemia that is associated with an increased AA gradient, okay? With an increased AA gradient. In fact, what are some other things that your NBMEs can do with this pathophys of, or, you know, these physiology, these lung numbers in a person that has ARDS? They can say, oh, what is the most likely mechanism? They can give you like a question about a person that has COVID-19 or was in trauma or drowned. And then they can say, oh, which of the following is the mechanism of the hypoxemia in this patient, right? Again, one potential answer can be like increased thickness of the space that oxygen has to diffuse through, right? That's one. Another classic one you may see, right, is they can almost like express it in different terms. So they can tell you intracardiac shunt as an answer. They can say intrapulmonary shunt as an answer. Which one should you go with? Well, I would really hope that you go with the term intrapulmonary shunt, right? So remember, when blood is traversing, because remember, blood that's in the lungs, right, is going to go from pulmonary artery first to pulmonary capillaries. In the pulmonary capillaries, it gets oxygenated, and then it proceeds to the pulmonary veins. So the thing is, if those pulmonary capillaries are around alveoli that have been filled with fluid, that have all those hyaline membranes, right, then guess what? There's no gas exchange that's going to be happening. So essentially, the blood is going to go from pulmonary artery straight through pulmonary capillary, is not going to get oxygenated, then it's going to go into the pulmonary veins. So it's almost like you've had like a waste of pulmonary capillaries, right? You could have almost like gotten the exact same result if the blood just went from the right ventricle to the left ventricle and just skipped the lungs, right? That's a shunt, right? Remember, VSD is a VSD in a person that has like Eisenmenger syndrome is an example of an intracardiac shunt. But if a person has ARDS, right, those pulmonary capillaries essentially giving you an intrapulmonary shunt, right? You get an intrapulmonary shunt. So you get a lot of perfusion, but you don't have adequate oxygenation to go along with it, right? That's the definition of a shunt, right? So it's very high yield to actually kind of keep that in mind. And again, remember, on H&E staining, right, you're going to see all these hyaline membranes, right? Sometimes you may see it referred to as diffuse alveolar damage. That is the histological correlate of ARDS on NBM exams, right? And I know some of you may be saying, wow, Divine, I didn't know that ARDS causes an intrapulmonary shunt. How else can the NBME test this? Well, they can test it in a person. They can give you a question about a person. They'll tell you that this person has these, this person comes in last 2-3 months. Person has been having a lot of shortness of breath, and the person has a history of like chronic epistaxis, bloody bowel movements, right? And then they give you all these reds, like they tell you that, oh, you can see these serpiginous tracts on the person's lips and buccal mucosa. If you see that, what should you be thinking about? Well, I would really hope that you're thinking about hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia, right? Hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia. Remember, that's what's also known as Osler-Weber-Rondeau syndrome, right? Osler-Weber-Rondeau syndrome. So remember, in that syndrome, these people tend to form, they have all these AVMs, these AV malformations. An AV malformation, right, is where you have like a direct communication between an artery and a vein. So you basically skip the capillary. Remember, gas exchange happens in capillaries. So if you form a pulmonary arteriovenous malformation, so you have like this AVM where the pulmonary artery is, or a bunch of pulmonary arterioles are directly connected to pulmonary venules, you're essentially skipping the pulmonary capillaries. You're not going to have gas exchange. That's going to cause hypoxemia, right? Again, one of the mechanisms behind hypoxemia and dyspnea in patients that have hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia is the presence of intrapulmonary shunts, right? But the intrapulmonary shunts, you observe them because you have pulmonary AV malformations. Again, it's very high yield to know that stuff. And remember, whenever you have a ton of AVMs, that can ultimately give rise to something called high output heart failure, right? High output heart failure, because the heart is, the person is just getting hypoxic. Whenever you have bad hypoxia, right? Your body's tissues are telling the body, heart, I need oxygen. Come on, man. I need oxygen. Give me oxygen. Your heart will be like, okay, I'll get the oxygen to you, right? So the heart never has time to take a breather. The heart just keeps working hard. Okay, let me keep increasing cardiac output. Like, whenever a person is hypoxemic, their cardiac output almost always goes up, you know, at least if their heart can respond appropriately, right? I mean, obviously, if you have hypoxia because the person's person has an MI or some cardiac thing, obviously the heart won't be able to respond, right? But if a person has hypoxia or hypoxemia, right, the cardiac output normally will increase, right, to meet that demand, right? But again, your heart is a muscle. Your heart needs to rest after a while. Right? It doesn't, your heart can, you know, in, like when you exercise, it can increase its cardiac output to help you out there. But if your cardiac output keeps going, is like chronically elevated, after a while, the heart being a muscle is going to crap out and it's going to die, right? The person is going to go into something called high output heart failure, right? And again, remember, high output heart failure is almost like a kind of dilated cardiomyopathy in a sense, right? It's almost like a kind of dilated cardiomyopathy. Those people's ejection fraction at first will be crazy high, be like 75%, but over time that person's heart will begin to go down the tubes. So again, very high yields to keep these things in mind with regards to the pathophysiology of ARDS, right? So again, don't forget, histological correlate is diffuse alveolar damage, right? So let me just keep chugging along so we can wrap up here, right? So how do we diagnose ARDS, right? So the thing is, you know, there's diagnostic criteria. In fact, these things are many times, you may see them referred to as the Berlin criteria. These Berlin criteria, they began in 2012, right? So what are the criteria, right? So basically, right, like, you know, one, they must have like an acute onset of symptoms, right? So it's not that, oh, they've been having this thing for like 3 months. No, right? They can have it for like 3 months. It's something that must have been going on for a long time. I mean, for a short time period, right? So it's something that must have been going on in their lives for, you know, like a few days. Usually it's usually less than a week, right, of symptoms, right? And then remember the bilateral opacities on a imaging, right? It can be a chest x-ray, it can be a chest CT. Sometimes you can even use ultrasound. But again, on NBM exams, chest x-ray, chest CT is just fine. Again, you need to be able to recognize ARDS on chest imaging on an NBM exam. That's a classic image that pops up on exams a lot of the time, right? So I definitely keep that in mind. And then the thing is, these people, because, you know, obviously, like the bilateral opacities you're seeing is just a ton of fluid in their lungs. You need to make sure, this is extremely high yield to know, you need to make sure that those bilateral opacities, right, that pulmonary edema they have is non-cardiogenic in nature, right? So how do you figure that out? Well, the way you figure that out is by measuring the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, right? The pulmonary capillary wedge pressure. Remember, the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure is a surrogate, right, for the left atrial pressure, right? Because literally, the way you measure it is you basically take a Swan-Ganz catheter or pulmonary arterial catheter, essentially advance it, you know, right atrium, right ventricle, pulmonary artery, pulmonary capillaries, and then you wedge it, right? So any pressure that that catheter is seeing is going to be pressures from the, you know, the pulmonary vein, and the pressures in the pulmonary vein, since the pulmonary vein is like almost like a continuous circuit with the left atrium, you're essentially seeing those left atrial pressures, right? And the magic number you want to remember for purposes of NBM exams is 18. If the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, again, which is a surrogate for left atrial pressure, is more than 18, that tells you that the person's pulmonary edema is from a cardiogenic cause, right? So for example, if a person has like a myocardial infarction and they have pulmonary edema, that's going to be an example of a cardiogenic pulmonary edema. A hallmark of cardiogenic pulmonary edema is the presence of an elevated pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, okay, more than 18. However, if a person has a non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema, right, so usually this is from, again, increased vascular permeability causes of pulmonary edema, like in ARDS, you're going to see a pulmonary capillary wedge pressure that is less than 18, okay, that is less than 18. That's very high yield to know. It's one of these diagnostic criteria, actually, that we use with ARDS, right? And then another thing with ARDS is don't forget the PaO2 to FiO2 ratio, right? So basically, how do you calculate the PaO2 to FiO2 ratio? Literally, you take the person's P little AO2, right, so the oxygen tension in their bloodstream, that's the P little AO2, right? And then divided by the FiO2. The FiO2, right, can be anywhere from 0.21, which is the FiO2 of oxygen that we get in the air, right, all the way to 100%, right? You can give a person more than 100% oxygen, right? So it can go from 0.21 to 1. So basically take the P little AO2 and divide it by the FiO2, right? The thing is, if I'm giving you 100% oxygen, which equals an FiO2 of 1, right? 100% can be taken as 1, right? If you're trying to express it as a fraction, right? So 100% is 1, right? So I'm giving you FiO2 of 1. Better believe it that your oxygen tension should be extremely high. It should be at least 350, right? In most normal individuals, a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio is usually between 350 to 450. Right, so we actually even use this to grade a people's ARDS, right? So if, for example, you notice that, oh man, this person's PaO2 is 300 and I'm giving them an FiO2 of 1, right, then the PaO2 to FiO2 ratio is 300, right? That's mild ARDS, right? So mild ARDS is where you have a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio of like 201 to 300, right? Now, moderate, obviously, if the number goes lower, your ARDS is getting worse, right? So the moderate ARDS is PaO2 to FiO2 ratio from like 101 to 200, right? And then severe ARDS is where the PaO2 to FiO2 ratio is 100 or less. So if a person's PaO2 to FiO2 ratio is 100, again, at person's on 100% FiO2, or again, FiO2 of 1. Remember, 100% FiO2, FiO2 of 1 is the same thing, right? If that is 100 or less, right, so that number includes 100, that's severe ARDS, right? And again, the thing is, when you're making all these calls, you need to put the person on a minimum PEEP, right? So PEEP is something called positive end expiratory pressure, right? PEEP of 5, right? 5 centimeters of water, right? That's the minimum, that's the PEEP. That's the minimum PEEP at which you make these kinds of calls, these kinds of definitions, right? So what do we do for people that have ARDS? Well, ARDS, you need to treat, you need to be very aggressive, right? These people need to be transferred to the ICU, right? They need to be transferred to the ICU. So people that are taking step 3, right, and you get a CCS case, these people, right, from the emergency room, you got to move them to the ICU. They don't have any business on the floor. They don't have any business hanging out in the emergency room. These people call an ICU, right? They need an ICU bed, right? So again, you can see why you need to take these precautions, right? ICU beds are in very limited supply right now in the US, right? So again, just be prudent. So you take them to the ICU, right? And obviously, if you go to the ICU, right, you need to hook them up to a mechanical ventilator. There are very few people with ARDS that don't need a ventilator. They pretty much need a ventilator, right? You know, if it's like super mild ARDS, you can put them on CPAP, but no. On NBM exams, those people need endotracheal intubation and mechanical ventilation. That's what you should go after on your exams, right? So the thing is, on the ventilator, there's some things you kind of need to keep in mind, right? What's the first one? The first thing you need to keep at the back of your mind in a person that has that's on mechanical ventilation, ARDS-wise, is you need to pay attention to the PEEP, right? So the PEEP is the positive end expiratory pressure, right? Basically, the PEEP, the minimum obviously is 5 centimeters of water, right? You can go higher than that. The only thing though is you gotta be careful, right? You literally need to be careful, right? When a person, when you're giving a person PEEP, right? Because, you know, the PEEP is gonna help, right? And actually, let's talk about how PEEP helps, because I want this to be a comprehensive ARDS podcast. So how does PEEP help? PEEP, right? Positive end expiratory pressure. You're basically using it as a mechanism to decrease the person's work of breathing, right? So think of it like this. Let's say you have two balloons. One balloon is completely collapsed, right? And you're trying to blow it up. You have to do like to blow up the balloon, right? It's going to take a lot of work to blow up that balloon, right? It's going to take a lot of work. But let's say you have a balloon that is just partially deflated. You just need to put in a little extra effort, like, and then the balloon will blow up, right? So the thing is, in a person that has ARDS, right? Because again, they form these hyaline membranes, they've pretty much inactivated surfactant, right? If you give them PEEP, basically what it does is that it keeps the alveoli partially open so that you don't have to put in as much work to completely distend those alveoli, right? So that's what's known as PEEP, okay? That's what's known as PEEP, right? So in general, people that have ARDS, you tend to place them at higher PEEPs, right? Although again, you gotta be careful when you're doing this PEEP, because again, if you give too much PEEP, you can pop the person's lungs. And obviously that will not be good, right? That's what's known as barotrauma. In fact, barotrauma at one point was the most common complication of ARDS, right? It was actually at one point in the past, the most common complication of ARDS. But now as people have used more wisdom with tidal volumes and all those things, that has become a, you know, largely a thing of the past, although it certainly still happens, right? So one key thing you want to pay attention to on the mechanical ventilator is the person's PEEP, right? The other thing you want to pay attention to is the mean airway pressure, right? Is the mean airway pressure. Again, you want to modulate that so that, again, you can keep as many of your light possible open as possible, right? Basically, the reason that you're doing all these PEEPs is you want to recruit more of your light. Because let me tell you this. There are three kinds of alveoli in a person that has ARDS. One, they can have alveoli that is perfectly normal, works great. Two, so that's one end of the spectrum, works great alveoli. On another end of the spectrum, they can have alveoli that do not work great at all, right? Those alveoli are shot. They are like terrible, destroyed, damaged, everything, right? So those alveoli, like, it doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to be able to do anything with them. And then there's the middle ground alveoli, right? The middle ground alveoli, those ones, you know, they are partially filled with some of that fluid, right? All those hyaline membranes, they are not completely filled. They are partially filled. Right, so those ones, maybe with a little encouragement, you could get them to open. Right, that's where you need PEEP. So you want to try to recruit those guys. Right, you want to recruit them from being middle ground to, you know, contributing to the pool of alveoli that are contributing to your gas exchange. Right, so one thing that giving PEEP does is it helps you recruit, actually helps you recruit more of those middle ground alveoli. Now, the thing is. So I've talked about PEEP, I've talked about the mean airway pressure. Now, the plateau pressure, right? This is something, believe it or not, that sometimes even on step one, it pops up, right? Definitely something you can see on step two, CK on step three. Definitely pay attention here, right? So the plateau pressure, essentially, what it is basically like the pressure that you're applying to your airways and your alveoli, right? During mechanical ventilation, usually the way they'll measure it is they'll do something called like an inspiratory pause. So the person will inspire and then they'll pause. They'll literally like stop inspiration and then measure the pressures, right? Because when you do that inspiratory pause, measure the pressure, right? That tells you almost like how much pressure there is like in your airway and in your small alveoli. Usually when a person has ARDS, you want to keep it like under 30 centimeters of water. Again, if it's too much, the person's lungs are going to explode, right? From barotrauma, right? In fact, this is actually it is literally the best predictor of how distended your alveoli are, right? Of how distended your alveoli are. That's the plateau pressures, right? So in general, right, again, to prevent this barotrauma, what we do is we put these people on low tidal volumes, right? So the tidal volumes are like 6 like 6 milliliters of oxygen, so 6 mL of oxygen per kilogram of your ideal body weight, right? So obviously, if a person weighs like 50, if a person's mass, I mean, technically, if you want to get all physics here, weight is not 50 kilo. There's no such thing as a person weighs 50 kilograms, right? That's absurd, right? Remember, weight is in newtons, but that's a different conversation. But basically, right, if a person's mass, ideal body mass is like 50 kilograms, right? 50 kilograms times 6 mL, right? That's 300 mL of water, right? Of oxygen, right? So it's the ideal body weight. You don't use the actual body weight. You actually use the ideal body weight, right? So these low tidal volumes, you know, obviously if you're breathing at lower tidal volumes, that's going to be protective of the lungs. That's what's called a lung protective strategy, right? And, you know, obviously if you're not bringing in so much like large volumes of oxygen into the lungs, then obviously you're not going to maybe be getting rid of CO2 as quickly as you should, right? So people that have these low tidal volumes, their PCO2 is going to rise, right? Their PCO2 is going to rise. But that's okay, right? That's okay, right? Because it actually improves survival. In fact, I will tell you this, because this can definitely be a classic MBME question. What are the two measures that have been shown to improve survival in people that have ARDS? One is the use of low tidal volumes, right, on the mechanical ventilator. And then another thing that has been shown to improve survival is the use of ECMO, right? ECMO is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. That's a different podcast. That is just not something I should talk about here, right? Because I feel like I can, you know, begin to lose some people pretty quickly with that. So ECMO may be a future podcast. We'll see, right? So low tidal volumes, high PEEP, right? Again, low tidal volumes and the use of ECMO have been associated with an increase in survival in people that have ARDS, right? People that have ARDS. And again, there's one vignette I actually want to discuss. I feel like I may forget now that it's in my mind. So the thing is, one unique thing your friends like. So if you remember when I talked about plateau pressures, I said that plateau pressures, they're the most important predictor of barotrauma, of how distended a person's alveoli are. Right, so you want to keep them under 30 centimeters of water when you're treating a person that has ARDS. The thing is, if the plateau pressure is really, really high, that can lead to the person's lungs exploding. Right, in fact, one unusual way that your friends at the MBME can actually test that is they can give you a question about a person with carbon monoxide poisoning. Right, well, one of the ways we treat people that have carbon monoxide poisoning is we give them like a ton of oxygen. Sometimes we can treat them in a hyperbaric chamber. Right, so they can give you a question about a patient that, you know, came in with carbon monoxide poisoning, was placed in a hyperbaric chamber, and then, you know, they'll give you like the carboxy hemoglobin levels initially. The person's carboxy hemoglobin level was really, really high, right, at first, and then they show you that that after this person is removed from the hyperbaric chamber, the person is having like really, really bad hypoxia, really, really bad shortness of breath, blah, 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 right? And then they may show you like a lung, like a chest x-ray, and you see like all this black on one side of the lungs, right? The person basically has a pneumothorax, right? A pneumothorax is actually a complication that can arise in a person that has been exposed to a hyperbaric chamber. Right, a person that has been exposed to a hyperbaric chamber, right? So just kind of keep that in mind, right? Because again, if you put these people under like just high ton of oxygen, very high pressures, those things can absolutely pop the person's lungs, right? And actually, earlier on, I said that two things that improve survival in ARDS. Actually, there are three things that improve survival in ARDS. So again, I said one, the use of low tidal volumes, right? Giving high PEEP, actually, you know, it helps, but it actually does not improve survival, right? So low tidal volume, the use of ECMO. The third thing is placing people in a prone position, right? So what is the prone position? Prone position is these people are lying on their bellies in the ICU, right? Not lying on their back, right? Supine position is actually not very great for oxygenation. Prone position is actually amazing for oxygenation, right? So prone position actually improves survival in a person that has a ARDS, right? And, you know, sometimes with ARDS, you can give people steroids, but it really doesn't help, to be honest, right? It really doesn't help, right? So, you know, it may make you not have to use a ventilator for as long, but, you know, many people that have COVID-19, for example, they get a ton of steroids in the hospital, but those things don't help, right? Another tricky NBME exam question answer they may give you is nitric oxide. Nitric oxide doesn't do squat, right? Because you think that, oh, by inhaling nitric oxide, it will cause pulmonary vasodilation, it will help with oxygenation. It doesn't help. It doesn't do squat, right? So I wouldn't pick that on an exam. But again, remember ECMO, right? ECMO is something that you give to people that have pretty much failed mechanical ventilation, right? I mean, there's I've seen an ECMO machine used before. Those things require a lot of physiological knowledge, right? I would not encourage you to be manipulating ECMO as a resident, right? You should probably be a fellow before you begin to think about ECMO. I mean, obviously you should understand how it works and or if you have like attendant supervision, but ECMOs are very complicated machines to use. That's probably a different podcast. It's something that, you know, I wouldn't mind making if I have the time or I remember in the future, right? So again, ARDS is bad, right? So please, let's exercise social distancing measures and all those things. And then please, before I go into my quick life lesson, so please subscribe. Again, this podcast, you know, divineinterventionpodcast.com, please subscribe. Any bit of support helps. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE Podcasts and Videos. And I also have this podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify. So please subscribe again. Any little bit of help definitely helps. Any donations, contributions. But again, please, you don't have to. Love making these podcasts for free. And then my life lesson today is, how do you see yourself? How do you see yourself, right? How do you see yourself? So the thing is, the way you see yourself really matters, right? And this is almost like an issue of self-esteem. I mean, there's a part of the Bible that says that as a man thinks in his heart, so he is, right? As a man thinks in his heart, so he is. So when you see people, they keep being like these Debbie Downers on themselves. Like, the thing is, if you're expecting the world to congratulate you, that's a tall order, right? Because the world, usually they will congratulate you when they want something from you, right? Like, have you seen how your friends will stroke your ego when you're helping them? But then the moment you give some pushback or something, they immediately depart, or they begin to like insult you, curse you and stuff like that, right? I mean, that's actually one of the ways to know people that are true friends or not. If a person is always like stroking your ego, right? As long as you're giving them something, right? Just withhold what you're giving to them, right? See how they respond, right? That will tell you, oh, this is a true friend, or oh, this is a bad friend, right? So I would just encourage you to just be prudent with how you see yourself, right? Many people, they are going to take, I mean, like I tutored a lot of people, right, for all the USML exams. I see some people before they take the exams, they're just like, I'm the worst test taker. I know I'm going to fail. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. The thing is, words, right, carry power, right? And I mean, even the Bible says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? So if you see yourself as a terrible person, as a bad test taker, as a dumb person, as a person that is slow compared to all your classmates, right, then, you know, you'll probably end up that way, right? As a man thinks in his heart, so he is, right? The thing is, many times when you're going through transitions in life, which again, people in medicine definitely go through a lot of transitions. I remember, you know, like when I was moving to med school, I went to Johns Hopkins for med school. I initially did my undergrad schooling in Kentucky. And when I moved to Baltimore, you know, it's a huge city, East Coast, versus living in Kentucky, that's like, and I absolutely love Kentucky. Moving to Baltimore, East Coast, place that, you know, potentially has higher crime. People that are maybe not always the nicest, right? Although I had wonderful med school classmates, met a ton of nice people in Baltimore. But that transition was really scary, right? And then you're in the midst of all these people that are wicked smart, right? From all over the country, super smart students from Boston, from California, from all the 50 states of the US, right? And then, you know, you're in a place, you're in an institution that is like a world leader, right? Super smart professors, everything, right? And then you're studying for the USMLE Step 1 exam, then Step 2 CK, then Step 2 CS, then Step 3. And then you're going into residency. You're being thrown right into the wild. Let's say you're starting off your residency with an IC or rotation or whatever, right? Like, all these things are just very scary, right? But the thing is, you need to have faith, right? You need to have faith. You need to see yourself. Even if you know that, man, it takes you a long time to master some concepts, tell yourself, oh, you know, I learn concepts fast. I learn concepts at a good pace. I'm not the slowest person in my class. I'm not the dumbest person, right? I mean, the Bible says that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, right? So even if you're not seeing it right now, still believe, right? Literally, still believe, right? Still believe. So see yourself in a good light, right? See yourself in a good light. If you see yourself in a good light, then that thing you see in your mind will very likely come to pass, right? It's just the power of imagination. And also just your speech. What do you say, right? What do you say to yourself? Again, even if something is going poorly, right? In my mind, I many times I tell myself, oh, Divine, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Well, I just keep quiet. Because many times when you're in that state, you begin to see things that are just not prudent, things that are just not smart. Right? So I'll just encourage you, see yourself in a positive light, right? See yourself in a positive light and don't hang around things that will make you see yourself in a bad light, right? There are some friends that are very good at dressing you down. They will point out all your inadequacies, point out all your defects, right? Or like there are certain, like, to be honest with you, what do I watch on TV for the most part? For the most part on TV, I just watch the NBA. Right? I just watch the NBA. That's it. Or, you know, I watch like these Christian shows. There's this show I found recently called Chosen. It's a great show. But usually like the news and all those things, I read the news. Like maybe I like look on Reuters or whatever. I don't really go into like watching TV news, because TV news, what is the news that sells? Bad news, right? News that would really like torpedo a person's emotions, torpedo a person's heart, right? Again, obviously, I'm not going to mention any specific news stations for this, but we know what I'm talking about, right? So, like, just watch what you feed your mind with, because those things can really affect your worldview, right? Can really affect your worldview. I mean, like, a classic biblical example of this is when the Israelites went to spy on the land of Canaan, right? If you notice, I think it was what, like, maybe like 14 people? It's either 12 or 14 people that were sent as spies. And guess what? About 80-90% of those people, I think like 12 people, like basically I know like some, everyone that went other than Joshua and Caleb, what did he do, right? They said, oh, wow, we're like grasshoppers in the eyes of the sons of Anak, or blah, 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 right? So imagine those people, they saw themselves as grasshoppers, right? They saw themselves as grasshoppers. And guess what? Those people did not make it to the promised land, right? Because their minds saw that they were small, they were the worst, they couldn't defeat the people in Canaan. So guess what? They did not enter Canaan. But the people that said, oh, you know what, we're going to go up there, we're going to defeat them. Yes, is it that the sons of Anak were not giants? They were giants, right? But these people, they saw in their hearts, right? Even if their surrounding circumstances did not seem to confirm it, in their own hearts, right? So what do you see is not what you see around you. It's what you see in your heart. It is what you see in your heart that ultimately matters, right? Because your surrounding circumstances, many times you have no control over them. Right? You have no control over the step one exam that's staring you in the face, or the step two CK exam that's staring you in the face, or the difficult patient that's staring you in the face, or a patient that has a condition that you don't know how to manage, right? Or a procedure that's in front of you that you don't know how to manage. But even if you cannot control what you are seeing around you, you can control what you are seeing on the inside of you, right? As a man thinks in his heart, not on the outside, in his heart, so he is, right? So watch how you see yourself. Joshua, Caleb, the people that saw themselves in the right light, even if they saw these giants around them, they made it to the promised land, right? But the people that saw themselves as grasshoppers, well, guess what? Their destiny ended up as grasshoppers. They did not make it to the promised land. So you have to be careful. How do you see yourself? What do you say about yourself, right? There's a lot of power in what you speak, in what you think, right? In fact, that's why you see, like, if you watch the news molds your mind, right? The news molds your speech. So watch what you say, watch how you think, because those things, in more ways than you could ever imagine, determine the outcome of your life. Because a person that is thinking the right way, a person that is very more, like, if you're thinking the right way, you become motivated, right? That's why, like, I remember when I was in Nigeria, the friends I hung around with was a core group of friends. I didn't have many friends, but my friends were a core group, and I knew them for years. These people, we always motivated ourselves. We always pushed ourselves to do just exploits, do great work, right? And if you check the lives of all these people, they are all doing well, right? So again, your mind, mold it. The mind is a very powerful thing, right? So watch what you feed yourself with. Don't hang around people that keep tearing you down, right? In fact, there are certain people you should not share your dreams and aspirations with. Because the first thing they do is they start picking on those dreams and aspirations. Like, oh, this is what is wrong. Oh, you can't do that. Oh, no, it's only two people that do this. No. The fact that only two people do it doesn't mean you cannot be one of the two, right? Or doesn't mean that you cannot break through that ceiling, right? So again, you can break through that ceiling, especially for the women. Don't let anyone make you think that you're some small person. Oh, because you're a woman, you cannot do X, Y, Z. No. You can do it, right? You can break through that glass ceiling if you start thinking about yourself in the right way and if you start confessing positive. So thank you for listening to this podcast. Again, sorry that this kind of went long. But again, one thing I think I should say at the end, please don't forget, if you see a person that has ARDS in the setting of large volume blood transfusion, think about something called TRALI. TRALI is a transfusion-related acute lung injury. It's basically ARDS, right? So it's a non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema in the setting of a blood transfusion. The cardiogenic pulmonary edema equivalent in the setting of a large volume blood transfusion is something called TACO. Transfusion-associated circulatory overload. That's usually in people that have pre-existing heart failure at baseline, right? So in TRALI, the PCWP, the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, will be less than 18. In TACO, right, the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure will be greater than 18. That's actually high yield to know for exams. Maybe I'll talk about that in a later podcast. So thank you for listening. God bless you. Have a wonderful Sunday, and I will see you in the next podcast. Thank you. Bye.